Going Linux, episode 417, a tribute to Tom. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Bill.
Whether you are new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
We hope that you find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and open source applications and using them to get things done.
If you want to send us feedback, please do so using our email at goinglinux@gmail.com or our voicemail line at 1-904-468-7889.
In today's episode, a tribute to Tom.
Yes. And so this is a special episode. As you know, or you may know, Tom was a co-host on our podcast from 2007 to 2013, and he recently passed away. We wanted to do a tribute to Tom by playing an episode of Tom at his best, interviewing someone and providing answers to listener questions in a listener feedback episode, and we found an episode that embodies all of that.
Yeah, we hope that you enjoy hearing Tom again, and Tom will always be a member of our Going Linux podcast family, and will be dearly missed.
We hope you enjoy this episode in our archives. It is episode 180, which we will play for you now. Going Linux, episode 180, listener feedback. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom.
And I'm your chief executive minion, Bill. In today's episode, listener feedback.
Well, guys, I've installed the new Skype 4.0 for Linux. And yes, I know it's a Microsoft product.
Sort of.
Yeah, sort of. But it seems to be pretty nice. This is the first time I've used it. I'm still trying to get used to it. It's not in the Mint repositories yet, so I had to download it from the Skype website. And one of the things I noticed is, you know, where you set up your own profile, well, it switched my location to Uganda.
Nice!
Oh, yeah. How do you like it there?
I don't know. It doesn't seem too much different from California.
The weather there is great.
Yeah. So anyway, I switched all that stuff back to where it should have been. It also changed me from male to female, which I didn't really appreciate, but I suppose, you know, they can do that.
Here's me shutting up.
All right. So you guys have been using Skype for a little while. I got a couple of questions for you. So I can see that there's a little window pops up with a picture. I've got a picture of Bill, but I don't have a picture of Tom.
There's not one in my profile.
Because there's no picture. But I can't tell, since we're on a group call here, a conference call, I can see that Bill's connected, and I can't see that Tom's connected. I can see where I can add more people, but I have no way of knowing who's on this call.
Are you looking at three panels? Do you have a panel on the right?
I have the individual panels for all this stuff.
Okay.
The same basic setting as was in the old Skype.
Okay, so you've got the stuff that's already been typed in the top panel and a place to type in the bottom panel.
Yeah.
Do you have a panel on the right?
Oh, I can see that in the chat, sure. I'm talking about the phone call.
Oh, the phone call. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Let's see.
Yeah, I can see everybody in the chat part of it. No problem.
I see both you guys.
Yeah, I see both. I see your profile picture, and of course, I see nothing for Tom except his blank, portrait and with his name on it, but
I don't see that. I see it. I'm missing it. It's tiny and it's below your picture, Bill.
You can expand that. There should be four little icons below the pictures. I believe the fourth one over is to make everything big, and then you have big panels. So I guess if you had video, it would be showing the video there.
Got it. Okay, well, that answers that question. It looked like a little gray square because you don't have a profile picture, Tom.
And when one of us types something new, do you get a little asterisk in the tray?
I do.
When you type something new. No, I have it set so that it pops up the screen.
But if you're not looking at it.
Oh.
I still get notifications.
I don't know. I haven't had it installed long enough to find out.
That was my only beef with it. Other than that, it's pretty neat. But if I step away for a minute and somebody types something, I come back. There's no evidence.
Okay.
Well, you know, my screens are always open, so I see it immediately. That's why I probably haven't noticed it. I really can't say if it does or not because I always keep the conversations open.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
mine are open, too. It's just that I might be looking at a different page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, okay, that's that question. And let's see here. Maybe that's it. I think we've talked about it all already. Those are really the only issues I've had with it.
Have you got any advertising yet?
No.
Yeah, well, if the Skype 4 is supposed to introduce some advertising, and I've gotten one advertising bit, and I can't remember what it was about. I think it was for Gillette or something. I don't remember what it was for, but I was like, huh, that's interesting.
Oh, I thought they would be advertising things like Microsoft Office or Microsoft Project. You know.
Well, I think it was Gillette, so you know, I guess they knew that I was male and I probably needed to shave.
Well, so. Then I'm glad I changed my profile back to male. Then I too can get razor and razor blade ads from Gillette.
Well, you might have gotten Lady Gillette.
Yeah, that's true. I could have.
But no, I hadn't seen any other advertisements. I don't know if it was just like a one-time shot, but I think, from what I understand, they're going to add advertising to Skype, and so don't be surprised when you get it finally.
Yeah. Okay. We'll see. But so far, the quality is good. I mean, I don't notice anything different, better or worse, about the quality of the call. The camera works. I tried that out last night. Everything seems to work just fine. So,
as far as the camera is concerned, I just tried to turn mine on just now just to freak you out. And evidently, it doesn't work on conference calls.
Yes. That's a holdover from the previous version as well. It didn't work on conference calls. So, yeah, I'm assuming that if you have a very large conference call and everybody has their camera going, it would take a lot of bandwidth. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, hey, Google Hangouts seem to work.
Yeah, we should try Google Hangout one day and see if we can record a show using that. I hear that you can.
I've heard that as well.
I'm not signed up for Google Plus, and I don't think I'm going to be for a while.
Well, that kind of nixes that idea, doesn't it?
You and Bill can do a show over in whatever.
Okay.
You know, by the way, Jono said it's time to upgrade, Tom. Okay,
yeah,
just reminding
you. Yeah.
Oh, so I see how this is going to go.
Yeah. All right, well, guys, I'll talk to you later.
Yeah, Bill's going to keep reminding Tom until he upgrades. Okay. Why don't you start the upgrade while we're recording, Tom?
No problem.
That should be no problems whatsoever.
All right. So, are we going to do a show here?
I think we should.
But I got some rants going on here. And I want to just say that Netflix sucks. They need to get their act together about having a Linux native client.
That's been a complaint for a while, Bill.
Yeah, I know. But I had some problems with them. I sometimes use PayPal to pay for things. And I said, well, I'll give this a whirl. And their system died. And they took like $20 of my money. And it took like 3 weeks to get it back. And I never did get to watch anything. So just want to say, Netflix, you suck. Don't like you. And you better get your act together. I mean, if they can put one for Android, why can't they do one for Linux? I mean, come on. No one wants your stuff. I mean, come on. And then I finally finished Tom, you're sitting down, right? Okay. I finally finished the Windows 8 testing I was doing for past 3 weeks. Uh-huh. And they need to hire someone from Ubuntu to do their interface because that Metro interface is just about stupid.
So you're saying even Unity would be better than Windows 8 Metro?
Unity makes Metro look... Unity's so far ahead of Metro, it's sickening. Yeah, it's fast, don't get me wrong, but you've got two different desktops, and you have to switch, and you got hot corners, and they pop one up when they're not supposed to, and you know, after a while, you do most of your work in the old type of desktop, and you really, that Metro is just in your way, and they need to have a way just to shut the darn thing off. I mean, but I know what they want to do. They want these Metro apps and stuff, and I was looking at the previews of them, but I'm going to predict that Windows 8 is going to fall on its face. I mean, Microsoft has already discounted it, saying you can upgrade. I think it's like for $40. And here's something. You can upgrade from the release candidate that you could download for free, so read into it what you want.
Huh. Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, Linux community, here's another opportunity for us to capitalize on people being dissatisfied with the Windows platform and wanting to switch to something else. Let's get them to switch to Linux.
By the way, for the first time in history, in the last quarter, Microsoft lost money.
A lot of money. But a part of it was for a charge off that they wanted to they bought something that they thought was going to compete with that DoubleClick or something that Google had bought, and they only lost like $64 billion or something. You know, hey.
So there goes my retirement fund.
Oh, I'm sorry, Larry.
Might just be time to dump that stock. Just
yeah, might be a little late for that too. Anyway, no, I was just kidding, everyone. I do not own any Microsoft stock, at least that I'm aware of. Moving into I think we've had enough of this. Let's move into our email.
Okay.
So our first email is from Matt, who isn't exactly pleased with our seeming change of format for our last episode, episode 179. Matt writes, "Hi, guys."
Hi, Matt.
Hi, Matt.
"I've been listening since the very early episodes, always a fan of the informative shows and silly humor." Silly
humor.
Come on, guys. Jeez. "I just listened to episode 179, Linux Applications Advanced. Has going Linux turned into casual chat for 3 minutes and then read Larry's notes out loud word for word for the rest of the show? It felt very fake to me. Is the podcast dying? Was this just a really rushed episode? I miss the hour or two long episodes with lots of chatting about the world of Nix. An old fan, Matt." Well,
I guess I was reading what Larry wrote word for word.
Yeah, Matt, that format is actually something we've used in the past, where I've written an article and we've basically read the article as an episode. And we've done that in the past primarily because not everybody reads the articles that are on the webpage. And I think in the episode I mentioned, or in the show notes, I mentioned that this was based on the article, which is something I don't normally do. But sometimes, you know, we do the article first and then the podcast episode afterwards. And sometimes we do a podcast episode and I use that to write the article. So not as unusual as maybe it seems. To be fair, though, it was a bit of a rushed episode, which is one of the reasons why it was shorter than normal.
And the minion, of course, messed up. He's not telling you that I was doing repair to this to Studio West's recording studio, and I kind of crossed the wires and stuff. So we won't talk about the fire.
Yeah, didn't make the news, but or did it? Was that fire? Was that fire? Okay, never mind.
You did not hear that. Move on.
Next up, we got David in Israel, and he writes, "Hi, Larry."
Hi, David.
Hi, Tom. Hi, David. Hi, Minion Bill.
Hi, Tom. Sorry. Hi, Dave.
You are the entertainment Bill.
Good night, Gracie. All right. And David says, "Your old and loyal listener, old in both meanings of the word, David, the expat Canadian in Israel here. What would you suggest for a newbie to Linux, but experienced, insert bad word, systems, programmer, to install in order to learn Unix-based systems, including Perl programming and command line? The machine is old, 8 years, 1.5 gigabytes, no GPU. I thought Linux Mint 13 Mate would do the trick. Any better ideas? Bestest, David."
Larry made some recommendations to David via email, and he said, you might try Mint 13 XFCE when it comes out, especially if you'll be working with Perl in the command line. I don't think you'll miss GNOME, and the PC will show a much better performance. Alternatively, if you are trying to learn system administration, you might actually want to install CentOS, the community-supported Red Hat variant, or straight Debian. These are the most common systems on non-commercial servers. If you are planning on taking certification exams like LPI or RHCE, these would be better than Ubuntu or Mint, since Ubuntu and its variants actually don't strictly follow all the standards for Linux file locations. Zentiel is a distribution recommended by listener Ken, the small box admin. This would be what you want if you're looking to run an actual small business server. I hope all these possibilities aren't overwhelming. Let us know how it goes.
Good advice.
Very good advice.
David responded to us to let us know how it was going. He says, "Thanks, Larry, and by extension, Tom and Bill. We'll try CentOS, seems to be the proper one based on your recommendation, and we'll also give some exposure outside the Debian model. We'll keep you informed. Have you tried Pingai OS? Any comments? I am running Linux Mint 13 Cinnamon on my new i5 8GB NVIDIA GPU machine. I'm thinking of adding Pingai in a second partition just to play with. Since I don't listen to Computer America, I miss Tidbits. I also miss Timbits, but that's another story. Much appreciated, David."
Bill, you've tried Pingai, haven't you?
I have, and it's one of my favorite distros. He does a nice job. I do not use it much anymore. I'm not real happy with his current iteration. I find it's a little unstable. He really tries to throw everything, including kitchen sink, into the distro. Uses a lot of PPAs and stuff like that. And I've had nothing but problem. It's based on Ubuntu. I think that a better alternative, because you can kind of build it the way you want, is just go ahead with a base Ubuntu system and then add what you want. That way you're not getting, because he throws everything in there, whether you ever use it or not. And if you don't want to do that, or you want something a little more customized, but you still want to be able to use the Debian commands, try Linux Mint. Linux Mint is also a real good one, but they have a lot more customizations, and they have like cinnamon, and is it called mate or, I heard of mate or something to that effect. I don't know what they're calling it, but they have several different, desktops. I would suggest staying with Ubuntu, or Mint if you want to stay in the Ubuntu round. And if you really want to look at, some of the outside Debian, look at Crunchbang for a very minimalist, or, just straight, Debian. But understand, if you use straight Debian, it's not as polished as Ubuntu or Mint. So I would say stay with Ubuntu or Mint, and I think you'd be happier. Just a side note, if you use those guys to learn some of the admin for Debian systems, it's going to be very similar. I believe that Ubuntu now has just gotten approved for the HP servers, as so now they can get support. So they're starting to become used in big server projects. So it wouldn't hurt to learn Ubuntu or use Mint or whatever. But Ubuntu's making inroads to corporations, so it wouldn't hurt to also know them along with Scent.
Norman wrote with a gone back to Windows story. Oh no.
Yes.
Should I read this?
Gave this one to you, Tom.
Thanks. Norman says, "Hi, Larry, Tom, Bill."
Hi, Norman.
Hi, Norman. Hi, Norman.
Okay, what's our next feedback? Oh, it goes on. I see.
Yeah.
All right. Norman goes on. "I've been a long-time listener and long-time user of Linux. My first taste of Linux was the Red Hat Linux 7 for Dummies book. I've never gone completely Linux because of my desire for modern PC games. However, new direction the modern desktop distributions have taken make Linux unusable to me. I have used and loved Ubuntu 10.04 and Linux Mint 10 for a good couple of years now, but they are no longer supported. Now I have tried Ubuntu 12.04, Ubuntu, Kubuntu, Zubuntu, all three, Mint 13, SUSE 12.1, Fedora 16, and the list goes on. None of them work on my PC any longer. With all the discussion on being able to use Linux to recycle older PCs, it no longer stands, and my PC is reasonable. AMD Athlon X64 3.0 gig, 4 gig of RAM, NVIDIA graphics card with 2 gig video RAM."
Hmm. Well, you know, that doesn't seem too shabby a system. It's not really all that old, and I'm not sure why it wouldn't work with Mint 13 or Fedora or any of those. Maybe you might want to try a distribution with a lighter weight desktop, but you've tried Kubuntu and Zubuntu.
Yeah, he says he really doesn't say what's failing.
Yeah.
And he has a graphics card with 2 gigabytes of video RAM on it, so, you know, it could be that, I mean, he has a pretty much of a beast of a system there. I would say it might be, he might be using just the closed source drivers for the NVIDIA graphics.
Oh, you know, that could be.
But it worked on an older distribution.
Yeah, but they changed the drivers, and you know, whenever you change a driver, sometimes it can break what used to work.
Sometimes they automatically include the open source, and unless you know, yeah, that you can get the closed source version of it, you think, oh wow, this thing sucks, and then you get the new driver for the graphics, and it's like, wow, it's a totally different system. But he doesn't give a lot of he doesn't say that what we can't really tell what's not working. I mean, if it's these new boards also have drivers for them. You know, a lot of these boards are made by Foxconn, I think, and so sometimes they might be a little wonky. Continuing with Norman's email, "None of the live CDs work. They look great when the boot menu comes up, and then they show loading fine. But when it gets to the desktop, it looks like an old television screen with snow only and a semi-pattern to it as well. I figured, okay, I need to get the NVIDIA driver working. Other than the Ubuntu Mint, it is a real pain. I fired up the Mint DVD and managed to get into a sort of recovery type mode. I installed to disk and installed an NVIDIA non-free driver. Once the install was finished, reboot and voila. On reboot with the NVIDIA driver, I got the snow screen. I tried to reboot into a safe mode and couldn't launch X. Ouch.
Well, that kind of backs up what we were saying about the video driver being the problem.
Well, before he goes back to the W, I got a suggestion. Go ahead and partition your drive and install the W for just day-to-day use. A lot of times they'll issue patches for the Linux, like Linux Mint is really on top of things, and so is Ubuntu. So go ahead and keep your Linux partition. Stay with Ubuntu or Mint for right now. And I bet after a few, you know, once the things settle down, because 12.04 is pretty new, and so is what? Is Mint 13, Larry? Is that it?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Mint 13 is still reasonably new, and they're constantly making patches. They're long-term support. So go ahead and keep W on one side of the partition, and just go ahead and continue working with your Linux partition. Yeah, stay with Ubuntu or Mint, and I think that one of these days you're going to just get these updates and boom, it's going to work again.
Well, you know, just listening to what you were saying, Norman didn't say whether or not he applied all the updates while the video card was working in the lower resolution. So if he was trying to install the NVIDIA driver before applying the updates, maybe you should try reinstalling, and this time, while you've got that old TV looking screen, go in and get all the updates and then go back and log back in again and see if now the video is better, because it might be with the default drivers that come, especially if they are updated. And then if not, go ahead and try installing the proprietary driver and perhaps the updated version of that with the updates to Mint or whatever distribution you're actually trying this with will actually work. So a couple of suggestions there if you haven't completely abandoned Linux and stopped listening to our show. And even if you have gone completely back to the W,
you can probably still listen to us.
Yeah, you can still listen to us. And if you're using Windows 7 and you upgrade to the Metro rectangles, let us know how that goes.
I do want to ask you a question about Mint 13, Larry. Mm-hmm. He says that he installed the NVIDIA non-free driver. I was only on the impression that that was always a default with Mint 13. So you think that might have caused a problem? He might have tried.
No, not with the video drivers.
Oh, okay.
They have the application that's also in Ubuntu called Jockey that actually, when you start your first installation of Ubuntu or Mint, or I think most of the Ubuntu derivatives as well, it will install a default driver that will get you up and running. And if it doesn't do the resolution that you need, or if it is lacking some of the advanced features, the Jockey application will run in the background for the first few times that you boot into your system, and it will suggest that there is a proprietary driver available.
Oh, okay.
And then you can download it. But it starts with a free version of the driver for even NVIDIA cards.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like I said, I don't use Mint very often. Actually, I haven't used Mint since I think like 10. I'm kind of staying with Ubuntu right now. And but I always, you know, they do a great job. So I've also noticed, you know, I know this might be beating the bush a little bit too much, but a lot of times you have to install all the updates in kind of order to get things to work, because they install this and then they install. So you might want to make sure that you do your installs and then try upgrading your NVIDIA driver.
Right.
Then again, that's just Bill. Minion can be wrong.
So I noticed we have a little bit more to Norman's email here, so let me just read that and wrap it up. So he says, I listened to the interview with Ubuntu's John O'Bacon, and I understand the direction Ubuntu wants to take is supposed to be good for newer users. However, if handing a CD to someone results in the kind of problems I've had, they will never turn to Linux. The problem here is not just Ubuntu, though. It is all of the major distributions. None of them are working on my PC. I can only use older versions with no support now. It seems there is no longer any call for non-3D desktops on distributions, and that saddens me. I still listen, but for now, I'm forced to go back to that other OS for more than just games. Norman.
You've just made Tom very sad.
Yeah. All right. Yep, sorry about that, Norm, and well, I guess we lost one.
Yeah. Keep listening, though.
Yeah. Next, in Jim's email, he writes, Tom, Larry, and Bill.
Jim.
No, this is just reverse alphabetical order.
Okay.
Thanks for reading my email about my friend with the dial-up modem problem on the Dell Ubuntu computer, and also thanks for the listener who suggested Puppy Linux. That was a very good tip about what Puppy can do. However, I believe that Puppy would be way over my friend's head. Her original laptop, on which I started my Linux adventure, appears to have a failing video card. The display is jumpy at times, and frequently the screen goes almost completely black, almost cannot see anything at all on it. Now, for the $64,000 question, would it be suitable to use a light-duty Linux server? I will be learning how to administer Linux servers and all that goes with it. Initially, all that I would have on it would be my sailing journal and to have it available for the World Wide Web. If so, which distributions would you recommend? Immediately after the laptop began failing, I experienced a personal kernel panic. I immediately began searching for a Linux computer using my netbook. It's a little small for my everyday use. I found an Acer PC with Limpus pre-installed at, of all places, Walmart.com. After researching it, I decided to give it a try. I will write to about that adventure, still ongoing, in another email, unless you'd rather I didn't. Thanks for putting on a great podcast, Jim.
Oh, we'd be really interested in hearing about that.
Yeah, and what was the price on that?
I don't know.
Okay.
If it was Walmart, it had to be inexpensive.
We'll be happy to hear about your adventures with Limpus. It's not a distribution that we know a lot about. It's not one of our most popular, for sure. Acer is also known for artificially locking down some of its pre-installed Linux computers. As for the server, if you're already familiar with Ubuntu, you can start with their server. Most servers qualify as lightweight, so you almost can't go wrong with almost any server distro. You can download the Ubuntu servers right from their website.
Sure.
Yeah. It's real easy, and you burn it, and you can boot it up, and I've actually played with it. It's all command line driven, but you can add a desktop if you want. Most of them don't add it, but, you know, that's a good way to learn the inner workings.
Sure. And Jim did write back. He said, thanks for getting back to me so soon. My adventures with Linpus did not last an hour. It did not seem to have any that I could find repositories for downloading software, nor was there any update manager. Kind of what I said. It's not one of the most popular, and
yeah.
You know, I think this is one of the ones that Acer has locked down, so it may not be a Linpus thing, it may be an Acer thing. Anyway, Jim continues, I just listened to episode 176 where you covered Windows 7 versus 64-bit Linux. Was the author's netbook a 64-bit? I did not hear it mentioned on the show. I have a 32-bit netbook, and from what I read, a 64-bit will not run on it. What do you think? Well, yeah, the author's netbook was a 64-bit. I did install the 64-bit version of Solus OS. I didn't read the disk label fully on the Acer, and it ran for 2 days before it crashed fatally. I'm surprised that the 64-bit would even run on that 64-bit machine.
You can't run 64-bit.
Unless it's 64-bit and they're just not telling you.
Yeah, anyway. It's probably processor 64-bit because, but Solus OS is a fairly new one, so it might not be the hardware.
Yeah. Anyhow, continuing with Jim's email, I couldn't get any live CD to boot on the Acer until I tried Puppy. I tried to install it, but it was too confusing to me and the install failed. However, I did fix the problem and now I can boot live CDs and install them again. Your comment about Acer locking down its Linux boxes is most interesting, as I am having trouble getting the Wi-Fi to work with other Linux distros. The Wi-Fi did work with Linpus out of the box, which was one of the reasons that prompted me to purchase it. I will go into the details when I write up the adventure. It's a bit late here in the Lone Star State right now. Okay, so go get your sleep, Jim, and when you've got time, let us know in a little more detail what went on with Linpus and your Acer PC.
Okay.
And I just want to say, who named that distro? Linpus, really? I mean, they couldn't come up with anything better. I mean, how about like Super Duper Operating System or something, but Linpus?
Wow. Or something that makes a lot of sense, like Oneric Ocelot or, you know.
Hey, back off. I'll get Jono on you.
Hey, you seem to be an Ubuntu fanboy now.
I do, don't I? It's awesome. I've drunk the Kool-Aid.
Okay.
And next up, we got Bill in Michigan, who wrote about Bill's interview with Jono Bacon.
Speaking of Ubuntu.
Oh, I love this. Go on, yeah. Tom, really.
He says, I think Bill's interview really stank. Oh, no, wait. Oh, no, that was
editorial license there.
Yeah, okay. He says, I thought Bill did an excellent job. I can see the controversy, though. He says, I like Jono. However, I do have issue with his clumping all Linux users, not liking Unity, into the elitist category. In fact, quite the opposite. I would call Canonical quite elitist when they put out something like 11.04, knowing full well that it's incomplete and virtually dysfunctional. It's like Canonical saying, we're on a higher goal. Are you 10.04 users too stupid to see it? My question, is Canonical proud of Ubuntu 11.04? And this isn't Canonical's first introduction of things before they were close to ready. Network Manager and Pulse Audio represent lesser pains for users, but fall into the same category as Unity. I don't doubt for a minute that the elitist viewpoint exists, as Jono states, but it's far from anyone who happens to be against trashing a distro for a greater cause. Larry, you're the prime example of a non-elitist in my book, and I'm sure it's a major part of your success. Jono may argue a polished 12.04 wouldn't have been possible without the steps that started with 11.04. This, I imagine, is true in that it may have taken longer. But the cost of going through that transition makes me shudder. A separate fork could have taken longer, but produced the same result. Keep up the good work, guys. Bill in Michigan.
So, Bill, you're not quite happy with Jono's comment about elitism. I think you may have taken it a little out of context, but I see your point. With 11.04, it's one of those releases from Ubuntu that's between the long-term support releases. And to some degree, you could make the argument that if you really want a stable version, you should stick with the long-term support releases, because in between, they're going to try new things, as they did. And trying Unity, beginning with 11.04, if I remember correctly, was one of those things that, you know, we help Ubuntu and other Linux distributions as the Linux community by trying out these new things with them. And like I said, if you really want stability, then stick with the long-term support releases.
Oh, you mean like I do?
Yes, exactly.
There you go, Jono.
I have to say, guys, you know, I talked to John on the record and off the record, and I think it was taken a little bit out of context. From what I gathered from it, the Ubuntu really wants Linux accessible to everybody, from housewives to students to kindergartners to power users to Tom. You know, it's, you know, they all want it accessible. And I think what John was saying is there's some people that aren't happy with the direction that Ubuntu's going, because they feel that it's not, they're not, their special operating system is no longer special, because the average housewife can use it to check her email and surf the web. And he said he hated that kind of, he didn't say, he just didn't like that kind of mentality. He wants everybody to use it. And that's just, that's what I got from it. And
yeah, that's pretty much what I got too.
He also said in the interview that 11.04 was not up to their standards, and he actually said it. We were disappointed. It wasn't polished. It wasn't where we wanted it to be, but it was a evolutionary step. Sometimes you have to make those steps to get to the final. And I'm sound like a fanboy. I'm sorry, but 12.04 shows the polish, and you know they can't make this polish. You know, I mean, it'd be nice if they could just go and say, look, it looks great. You know, we everything we tried here worked. But a lot of times, you know, things they tried didn't work, or they say, ooh, that maybe wasn't as good as we thought it was. So, you know, as users, we've got to help them test it and offer them feedback. That's what they have the forums there for. And so, I mean, I know they listen to people, and you know, John is very approachable. I believe all of them are approachable. If you actually have a legitimate concern, shoot him an email and say, hey, just want to let you know this sucks, or I think this is great, or, you know, you guys have been, you know, drinking while you're designing this. So, you know, let them know. I mean, they don't create this stuff in a vacuum.
Right. And I think your comments just underscore my comments of, if you really want something that just works, stick with the long-term support releases and expect that the releases in between are going to have some things that don't work because they're still
experimental,
working on them. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if I weren't doing this show, I probably would follow that advice myself. But, you know, there are people who start using Linux right between the long-term support releases of Ubuntu or Linux Mint or any of the other distributions that take the same philosophy on releases. And as a result, you know, we've got to kind of keep up with whatever the latest is. But like I said, if it were just me using Linux for my own personal use without doing this podcast, I would probably be using the long-term support release. And if there was a new feature in one of the applications that I needed, I would be using one of the backports or something like that.
Sure.
to get the latest. Or like in the case with Skype 4.0, download it from the developer's website.
There you go.
That's a good point.
Yeah. And now a special interview that Tom conducted recently with Jonathan Nadeau of the Accessible Computing Foundation. Tom?
I'm talking today with Jonathan Nadeau, the executive director of Accessible Computing Foundation, which is kind of impressive. What is the Accessible Computing Foundation, Jonathan? Oh, by the way, hi.
Hey, Tom. Hey, hey. Larry and Bill also. I'm sure you guys will say hi later.
Oh, yeah.
The Accessible Computing Foundation is a nonprofit organization dedicated to developing free accessible software, and we want to bridge the gap between accessibility and technology. And you know, this day and age, technology is moving so quick at such a rapid rate. The faster technology is moving, the faster accessibility is being left behind. And so the foundation has been put together to bridge that gap and bring accessibility back up to speed with the rate technology is moving at.
Okay. And just to make it clear, by accessible, we're talking about making computing available to people with physical challenges.
Yes, exactly. Like, I myself am a blind GNU Linux user, but we're not focusing on just, like, blind and low vision. We want to cover any type of accessible need, from learning disabilities, dyslexia, to paraplegics, quadriplegics, low motor skills, hearing impaired. We want to cover the gambit.
Excellent. Well, that sounds like a big job.
Yeah.
And I hear you just got your, is it 401c?
Yes, the 501c3. We just got the status, and we're extremely excited about that, and which is part of the reason why I'm here today, is to announce that we're going to be having a fundraiser on August 25th, which is a Saturday, and we will be starting at noon Eastern Standard Time and stopping at midnight. It's essentially going to be like a 12-hour-long podcast. Okay. We're going to have the whole event streamed live at thenewradio.net. Now, all of this information I'm telling you, I'll give you a URL that you can visit later on, and you'll see all of the information there. You'll be able to see everything that I talked about on the interview. So we'll be at the linuxbasics.com. They have their own Mumble server, and we'll be utilizing that. They can have up to 30 people in the room at once, so I'm going to be in there hosting the essentially 12-hour podcast, and throughout the time, we'll have people be able to come in and out of the Mumble room, which you'll have the information to log into when you visit the site, but people will be able to log in and out of the room, and we're going to have Jono Bacon showing up, Stefano Zaccaroli, the project leader of Debian. I'm hoping to get Aaron Saigo on, maybe Joan Marie Diggs, the project lead of Orca. So we're going to have various people showing up throughout the 12 hours, and if you're in the room when Jono or Stefano shows up, you'll be able to hang out with them, talk to them, ask questions. And, of course, we'll be discussing free software and accessibility throughout the 12 hours and whatever other topics might come up, you know, in those 12 hours. But we'll be trying to focus basically on accessibility and free software for the most part.
Excellent. And are people going to need to install some sort of a program to take part in this?
Yes, well, you'll have to install Mumble, which Mumble runs on everything. If you're running any Debian-based distro, Mumble's already in the repos, so like Linux Mint, Ubuntu, Debian. It's in the Fedora repos. I've yet to find a distro that doesn't have Mumble packaged, so you can easily install it. There's also instructions on the linuxbasics.com website on how to install it and how to get it set up. So you'll have all the instructions there. Mumble also works on Android phones. It works on iOS. It runs on Mac. It runs on Windows. It runs on everything. So you should be able to get it installed in some way, shape, or form if you want to take part in the discussion in the Mumble room.
Cool. And you said this is a fundraising gambit?
Yes. So what we're looking to do is you can become a member of the Accessible Computing Foundation. We have four levels, bronze, silver, gold, and platinum. And they start at $2, $10, $20, and $50 a month. But you can also make a one-time donation if you'd like also. But the fundraiser is to – our goal is to reach 1,000 $2 members. Now, we feel that that's a reasonable goal because $2 is 50 cents a week. $2 might not seem much to one person, but with 1,000 people, that can make a difference. And essentially, that will really be able to help the foundation get off the ground and start moving forward with paying developers to, you know, either fix bugs or help other projects out with accessibility. So that's really the goal, is to get 1,000 $2 members, and we can start paying developers, like I said, to squash bugs like with Orca or Pigeon or GNOME or XFCE. We found a bunch of college developers where we can get a lot of this low-hanging fruit, a lot of bugs that have been hanging around for a while. And we're going to take this money and pay them and start, you know, getting rid of the bugs within accessibility and start gaining some ground that way.
Excellent. So you do have some developers lined up?
Yes.
College kids, did you say?
Yeah. I've been working on, like, not every college, but a good amount of colleges have a chapter of the ACM, which is the Association of Computer Machine. And basically all the CS departments have a chapter, and I've been emailing them, reaching out to them, and I've even set up a bunch of talks to give a talk at each chapter and let them know about accessibility and the foundation and what we're trying to do. And, you know, it'll be a way for these college kids to earn some extra money on the side. And they'll also get some experience, like, you know, it'll be good for their a job opportunity because they can show their employer, hey, look, I made this commit and this commit against, you know, these packages. And you can read my source code. You can see my commits. So it's just good all around for everybody. It's win-win for everybody.
Great idea. Great idea. And is there anything else like this out there right now?
I mean, not as far as with accessibility. I think we're really going to rattle some cages doing what we're doing because... Good. You know, the assistive technology world is a strange place, and if you're not involved in it, a lot of these things would kind of blow your mind. Really, the thing that I think we're going to make the difference in, which I love the most, is a lot of the accessible software that's out there, the proprietary stuff, is outrageously expensive. And
oh yeah,
I'm not against paying for software, but you know, in this country at least. We believe the market can control, you know, the market can be controlled by the consumers. Well, with assistive technology, 70 to 80% of blind people are unemployed. And the most popular screen reader for Windows right now costs $1,200. So if 70 to 80% of people are unemployed, how in the world are they going to afford that? So right away, we can't control the market because it's out of our reach. So, the companies that make the software, price it so high because they know the government is going to come in and pay for it, which that's fine for them. And, you know, and it's fine for the people, I guess, that get it for free. But the problem is the government only has so much money and they're only going to budget so much. So not every blind or low vision person will get a screen reader. So with the Accessible Computing Foundation, we're really going to, you know, disrupt this whole industry, I'm hoping. And, you know, bring accessibility back into the control of people that actually depend on this, that actually depend on accessibility, that need assistive technology. We'll be back in control of the software. We can control it. We can squash bugs. We can make bug reports or requests and get a hold of the developers, you know, just through an email. So we'll be back in control of our own destiny with accessibility.
Excellent. And are you going to run this whole thing? You're going to coordinate everything?
Yes, I'll be, like I said, I'll be there for the whole 12 hours on the fundraiser, and, you know, I'm the executive director, so I'm in charge of, coordinating, you know, developers and trying to figure out, all right, where's the next plan of attack going and things like that. So I'm really trying to schedule some talks to really, you know, to get the foundation out there and let people know what we're about and what we're doing, and, also bring awareness to accessibility, you know, and that's the most important thing also. There's over close to 1 billion people in the world that have some type of disability. There's 370 blind and low vision people throughout the world. So 1 billion people, that's a whole market that's not being tapped into, as even for like consumers and stuff that are being left behind. So we want to, you know, we want to even let companies know, look, if you can, you know, if you can make this gadget accessible to blind people, you just got another 15 million people in the United States that could possibly buy your product.
Sure.
So there's things like that that we want to point out to, you know, companies and software developers as such. So that's the goal, to bring awareness to accessibility and to also bring accessible freedom to everyone around the world that needs assistive technology.
Wow, you're taking a big bite there.
Someone's got to do it, right?
There you go. And you said you were going to mention a URL where people could find out about this?
Yes, thank you. So the foundation's URL is accessiblecomputingfoundation.org. I know that's a mouthful. I tried to get acf.org, but when your listeners visit that website, you'll see why I didn't get it.
Okay. is she cute?
No, it's nothing like that. So if you go to accessiblecomputingfoundation.org, right on the front page, I'll have all the information there. But you can also visit Linux Basics, and that's BASIX.com. If you visit LinuxBasics.com, where you got your forums are, they'll have instructions also right on the front page. I imagine they're going to put them up there, and all the information on how to install Mumble, how to log in with Mumble, the information you'll need to log into Mumble. Everything will be right there. And like I said, if you visit the Accessible Computing Foundation, it'll be there. Or if you visit LinuxBasics.com, it'll be there. So either way, you'll find the information. And it'll be August 25th, starting at noon Eastern Standard Time and ending at midnight Eastern Standard Time. And we're looking forward to everyone showing up. I hope we all have a great time. And, you know, if you know somebody that needs assistive technology, if you know a friend of a friend that might, you know, that needs assistive technology, you want them to listen to this event. There's a lot of people that depend on assistive technology that aren't even aware of, like, what free software is or even GNU Linux. I got a funny story for you, actually. I was at the store the other day at Target with my wife and my family, and I'm standing there, and my wife went off with one of the kids down another aisle, and this lady comes up to me, and she's like, "Excuse me, what's this?" And I sort of didn't think she was talking to me, so I didn't say anything, and she's like, "Excuse me, what's this?" And I was like, "Oh, me?" And she's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "I'm blind," and she started laughing, and she's like, "So am I."
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. So she's like, "I can't believe that. You're the first person I've ever, you know, run into that was blind when I was trying to ask him what something was. She had, like, really low vision. She could basically see, like, shadows and stuff. And but it was really funny. So I started talking to her, and I was like, "Oh, what do you use for technology?" And she uses, you know, JAWS and everything. And I said, "Have you ever heard of Linux or free software?" And she's like, "No, what is that?" And so there's a lot of people that depend on accessibility that have no idea that this stuff even exists.
Right.
So that's why we want to bring awareness to it and get it out there.
Yeah, so. And even when you do tell them that there's something better and cheaper and more bug-free and everything else, it's not what I'm used to.
Yeah,
it's discouraging.
It, totally. It's the same, you know, quandary that, you know, sighted people have just telling normal users, "Hey, why don't you try Ubuntu out or Linux Mint out?" "I don't know."
Yeah.
You know, same thing. It's kind of surprising, but it's the same thing. It's funny.
If I'm not paying a fortune for it, it can't be any good.
Right, exactly. Or, yeah, you know, they're just used to it. You know, we're creatures of habit, unfortunately.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, and you know, and it's all, you know, and that's funny too, because people that even though, you know, JAWS, it costs $1,200, it's nowhere near perfect. It's buggy. It crashes or whatever.
Sure.
And they put up with it. "Oh, well, this is the way it is." You know,
and then the next thing you know, you need an update, so you got to get the checkbook out again.
Exactly, that's exactly how they roll. You know, that's definitely it. And if you report a bug, you know, either they'll ignore it and never fix it, or like you just said, hey, good news, it'll be on the next upgrade. So
yeah,
you know.
Okay, well, I guess we've about covered everything. Anything else?
Oh, no, I just want to thank you, Larry and Bill, for the podcast. I've been listening since, I don't even know, episode 40 or 35 or something.
Wow.
Way back. So I just thank you guys for everything you do. I love that you guys give useful information for even the new users, the intermediate users. I think you guys are kind of one of a kind podcast right now. Maybe two or three others that focus on, you know, kind of tutorial type things. And I appreciate all you guys do and keep up the great work.
Well, you're welcome, and thank you. I've enjoyed this interview.
All right, thanks, Tom, and again, say hi to Larry and Bill for me.
Okay, tell John I still haven't upgraded, or John, or rather.
Okay, I'll let him know.
Okay. Okay. Okay, Jonathan. Well, thanks a bunch.
No, thank you, and have a great night. Thank you.
You too. Take care.
All right.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Okay, and I think that wraps up our episode, guys.
Oh, all right.
Has anyone got a software pick?
I do, Larry. I always have a software pick. I'm going to say check out the new Firefox. It's at like 13.01 or 13.02 now. They made some changes to interface. It runs fast. I've been enjoying using it. I've been kind of comparing it against Chrome, and I've been pretty impressed with it. I think its memory footprint is a lot less than what it used to be, so those guys are definitely working on it.
I don't think you have a choice. If you're running Firefox, it's going to upgrade itself, isn't it?
Yeah. I guess you're right. Never mind. I don't have a software pick.
Oh, yes, you do. That was a good one.
For those people like me who are using a different browser, yeah, that's a software pick. Go look at it. Go try it out.
Exactly. So thanks, Bill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Okay.
And now the wrap-up.
So in our next episode, guys, we have... Our next episode will be keyboard shortcuts. Until then, you can go to our website at goinglinux.com for articles and show notes, as well as links to download and subscribe. We provide the website for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
And if you'd like, you can participate directly with our friendly and helpful community members by joining the discussion in our Going Linux podcast community on community.goinglinux.com.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.